Welcome to our weekly markets update from Chief Investment Officer Sonia Loud and her team here at Legal & General Investment Management. This episode was recorded earlier today and is intended for investment professionals.
Hello and welcome to our first CIO market update, a weekly call we'll hold during this period of volatility induced by the coronavirus outbreak. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Tim Drayson, Head of Economics, and Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy and Research. Right, I'm going to kick off by asking you, Sonia, as a long-term manager of our clients' assets, how are we investing around the extraordinary market moves we've seen in recent days and weeks?
Thank you very much, Max, and a very good morning from us here in Coleman Street. And before I answer your question, just let me say that we are here to help. We are here to answer questions. So if there's anything we can do to help, please let us know and reach out to your sales representative. I think for us, if we think about the current environment, it's clear that we are experiencing an external shock. And we believe before taking any action, it is incredibly important to understand what we are facing and how the current situation really will shape and impact our long-term outlook. We believe that understanding the economic impact is first and foremost an important area of analysis, and this is why we are joined today by our head of the economics team, Tim Drayson, to share some thoughts on how we are modeling and looking at the current impact and how this will influence our longer-term economic forecasting. Secondly, we need to understand how the policy responses, and there have been numerous responses already from central banks and governments around the world on how to tackle the crisis. But obviously, as we know, not all measures will have the same impact, and it is incredibly important to understand how effective these policy measures will be and when effectively they will help to alleviate the pressure points. And then last but not least, it's the market reaction function. Clearly, we are seeing huge liquidity bottlenecks emerging in markets, and it's very clear that the market is not working properly across the board. And so, again, it is important to understand why there are some segments seizing up, why we're seeing volatility in other areas, and how, again, policy measures will help to alleviate those points. And just to come back a little bit to the economic response and why it's so important to understand the impact on this. As we know, a recession and the way a recession starts is not always the same. And I know that right now we're looking a lot towards the 2008 and 9 experience, but we have to understand that the implication right now might be very different, because it is not a financial market overhang that we're trying to deal with here. It is a real economy impact. We're currently, policymakers are trying to shut down economic activity across the board, and that is a very different phenomenon and hence needs a very different answer from policymakers in order to address this.
Perfect. Thank you, Sonia. So Tim, following on from what Sonia's just said, you know, we've seen some early economic data that given us something of an indication of the impact so far of the coronavirus outbreak. How do you think that's likely to play out on global growth going forward?
Good morning, everyone. So as Sonia mentioned, authorities are directly shutting down activity in order to contain the spread of the virus. And this is already having a dramatic impact on the high frequency indicators. So things like restaurant sales, cinema visits already plummeted. So let me run you through three potential scenarios, bearing in mind this is a unique sudden stop. It's more like a natural disaster spanning the entire globe and running for several weeks. So there is a glimmer of hope that we could, once the storm abates, see quite an aggressive rebound. So in our first scenario, you get a very deep initial downturn. The year-over-year numbers towards the end of this month and in April will look especially terrifying. But hopefully after a few weeks of the various types of shutdowns we witness across the world, the new infection numbers begin to decline, perhaps quite quickly. And that was the experience in China and to some extent in South Korea. That will then allow some steady kind of reopening of activities from May onwards. And on the basis that that doesn't lead to a significant increase in new outbreaks, combined with the policy responses which we'll discuss, you could get a particularly rapid recovery and return to normalization. So a real V, sudden down and sudden back up again. In terms of global growth, you probably wind up around zero for this year, but then potentially plus five next year. Now, in a second scenario, it's the same to begin with, so this dramatic fall in output initially. The containment strategies are gradually lifted in the second half of the year, but it's not as smooth as in the optimistic case. And you still get kind of sporadic outbreaks as people try and return to work and then to renewed additional restrictions. This scenario leads to a kind of more significant rise in unemployment and bankruptcies. We still do get some recovery, and we begin to learn to live with seasonal outbreaks, and perhaps eventually there is some kind of vaccine found in 2021. And the overall impact on growth will be similar to the financial crisis in terms of GDP, so probably minus four this year, and then somewhat of a good recovery in 2021. But we still have a world which has lost a couple of years of output. And then in the third, more pessimistic scenario, it's actually worse than the financial crisis. So again, the same initial hard stop, but restrictions remain in place over a longer period due to fears of a secondary surge in the winter, and worries that the mortality rate from the virus is higher than the experts have been assuming. Of course, this serves to undermine confidence with a much larger rise in unemployment. And policy by this point is largely exhausted. So you get a big contraction this year and an only very gradual recovery in 2021.
Right, and which is your base case of those scenarios right now, given the data that we've seen?
So I'm probably leaning more towards the middle one, but I'd have a higher weight on the optimistic one rather than the pessimistic one. So I'm of the view that we will get through this, you know, growth and markets will recovery, and some good can come out of the adversity, but don't underestimate the human spirit.
Right, well, that's reassuring. Thank you, Tim. And then looking at those policy responses you touched on, we've seen some very large monetary interventions recently. How effective can central banks really be in stabilizing the economy and markets?
So clearly there's a limit to what they can do in the short run, given the authorities are shutting down the economy. It doesn't matter how much money you throw at the problem. They can, of course, help to stabilize financial markets, which have the potential to add a kind of an additional layer onto the contraction. So I thought the ECB action last night was helpful, this pandemic emergency purchase program. We've already seen the impact on bond yields this morning. We've seen the Fed outlay a variety of acronyms and lending programs on top of more quantitative easing and zero interest rates. I think there's more which can be done there. But ultimately, we need to see a big fiscal response to give cash to businesses and people affected by the shutdown in activity.
Right, and are the fiscal responses we've seen to date sufficient, in your view?
Not yet, but I think the authorities are beginning to wake up to the severity of the crisis. Congress is discussing a $1 trillion package as we speak. We've already seen enhanced measures coming out of Europe, the UK and Japan, and I think these packages will just grow in size over the next few days and weeks.
Very interesting. Thank you, Tim. Ben, moving on, looking at markets, what are the main trends you're focusing on right now?
Yeah, thanks, Max. So, I mean, I think a lot of people, myself included, you know, we get fixated on things like the FTSE going up and down, and then ultimately, you know, where house prices going, et cetera. And that's going to be important, you know, don't dismiss that. But the most important thing right now in markets are money markets. So flows and liquidity, those are the things in all crises, and this is a crisis, those are the sorts of areas that are the epicenter of what's going on. So in money
markets, these are the very short-term funding markets we're talking
that's
about.
That's right, where investors, funds, everyone parks their cash, and they invest in short-dated government bonds or short-dated corporate credit. And the issue today is that, you know, investors are withdrawing cash because they need it somewhere else, or they are moving from credit-type money markets into government-type money markets. And that means that the fund has got to sell corporate credit and try and buy government credit. And that's proving very difficult because normally banks will facilitate that. but banks just don't want to use their balance sheet for this. Their balance sheets are full, and it's proving really difficult. And look, the fact that we're in three different locations and everyone else in the whole of the city are doing exactly the same, that business continuity type thing, that does not help this level of liquidity. Now, central banks are trying to sort this out. We've seen programs for for commercial paper. So this is corporate short-term borrowing, where they will support that market. That's going to help, but it'll take a while to come through. And right now, it does feel rather gummed up.
Well, are the moves we're seeing in money markets related to some of the very big moves we've seen in currency markets?
It's all linked. It is all linked. I think sterling was a little bit about, you know, the measures being put in place specifically in the UK, but also because the dollar short-dated funding is so problematic, everyone is running to the dollar. Everyone wants to try and buy dollars, however it happens. And on that basis, lots of other currencies have suffered. People are selling out of the pound. But if you look at other in emerging market currencies, there's some real stress there in terms of people selling, particularly oil-producing countries. They've seen big fall. The Russian ruble seen a 30% fall. So we're not quite there yet, of course. And it's feeding through into lots of other asset classes. The government bond markets are also seeing big squeezes. Normally, when asset classes like equities, corporate bonds, when they fall in value, that's usually hedged by government bonds rising in value. And lots of funds do that trade. They buy equities and they buy government bonds, hoping that the two hedge each other out. These days, the last few days, the last week or so, government bond yields have been going up, not down, which means the price of the bonds have also been falling alongside everything else. So there's been lots of strange correlations going on. And that's actually forcing lots of funds to think about their liquidity, their flows, and what they might be able to do in terms of the stress. So maybe I'll just pass on to Sonia just to talk about some of these stresses that are going on.
Yeah, and I think, and before doing so, it's very clear that what Tim just said in terms of the three scenarios obviously leads to the uncertainty that translates to the market dislocation. Given that at this point we only know that we will inevitably face a very sharp downturn economically, but we are not yet clear how long and hence how deep that downturn will be, you see obviously financial markets reacting to this, and hence the dislocation that we're seeing in some is a reaction function of this uncertainty and people obviously trying to readjust to what we are seeing. And I think what we said right at the beginning, the point obviously is the understanding of what is going to happen will inevitably lead to some action in terms of the rebalancing, the understanding of long-term asset returns. But we would urge that obviously any, you know, as quick action might not lead to the desired outcome. Uncertainty we find everywhere, and I think it's worth mentioning the property market here in the UK, because we have had over the past couple of days, obviously, the uncertainty around the valuation dynamics in UK property markets, and hence the suspension of some property funds. We believe this is a very sensible measure just to provide calm to a market where currently the pricing mechanism is just too uncertain to produce realistic numbers. And we assume that this is actually a phenomenon we are seeing in other asset classes as well. We talked about money markets. There is liquidity shortfalls in some of the short-dated sterling credit. And hence, we would hope that we can obviously see policy measures calm down those dislocations so that we can take very sensible long-term investment decisions, because inevitably we have to adjust to the new normal, but we will get through this. But taking any premature action now might not lead to the desired outcome.
Right. Well, that's a very important point and a good point on which to end this call. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this week, but I'd like to thank our speakers for your time today, and I'd like to thank all of you for dialing in. If you've got any questions you'd like to put to the panel next week, please let your usual Elgin representative know. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.